KIOS-FM presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's guest speaker will be former Nebraska Secretary of State and currently Executive Director of the Nebraska Press Association, Alan Bierman. His topic will be Nebraska Politics, the Real Stories. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, January 18, 2007, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Rob McCartney from KETV Channel 7.
On behalf of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee, I'd like to formally welcome you here for another one of the Press Club's Noon Forums. Now, at least once a month, the Press Club sponsors a noon forum that we think is of interest to not only our members, but also to the general public, and a reminder that the forums are open to everyone. You notice on your table there's paper and pencil. We will have a brief Q&A later on, so please write down your questions so they can be brought up here. Now, today we are pleased to have with us an icon of Nebraska politics and government. I was trying to look for the perfect word, Alan, and that's the best one I could come up with. If you ran for public office in Nebraska anytime between 1971 and 1995, you got to know Alan Bierman. Maybe you were in the military, and sometime during a 29-year period, you ran across the Judge Advocate General Corps. If you did, I want to know what you did, and you may have also gotten to know Alan Bierman. Or if you have been following since 1995 the Nebraska Press Association's efforts on behalf of the state's media outlets, you probably know Alan Bierman. But if for some reason you don't know Alan Bierman, you soon will. Briefly, he's a former Secretary of State, is now the Executive Director of the Nebraska Press Association, and in 2 weeks he will be named as the Rotary Club's Nebraskan of the Year. Mr. Bierman has pretty much seen it all. He's the only person I know who carries with him real working phone numbers of world leaders. Just ask him. I hope he brought enough for everybody. He has shared countless meals with national and international dignitaries, and we're honored that he's sharing one more with us today. So here with stories you haven't heard about Nebraska politics and some thoughts about the state of state government today, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Alan Bierman.
Rob, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here. He did forget to mention that I was a notary public. Now, there is a better definition for icon. It's called fossil. I'm the official living state fossil, and when I go back in the afternoon, I've got to go back on exhibit. Now, as I understand, my assignment is to visit with you for, 2 or 3 hours. Your assignment would be to listen for that long. Now, if you get done before I do, just raise your hand, and we'll all be out of here in a hurry. I want to acknowledge Mike Overman over here. Mike is one of my members, one of my bosses. I work for him, and he has a paper over here at a town formerly known as Gretna. And Mike is actually a past president of our Nebraska Press Advertising Service. You know, I wonder, can oh, radio can't. I understand that. I was in radio in the last century in Fremont. What I want to do for a few minutes today is talk to you about things that did not make the news. Some interesting things that happened here and elsewhere, and they're just kind of interesting stories, things that happened along the way. These are going to be in no particular order. But one time, some of you will recall that we were going to play Kansas State in Tokyo. Who, anybody with that game? Nobody? Well, we played Kansas State in Tokyo, in the Tokyo Dome. Balin Manufacturing at Columbus, Nebraska, they had been trying for several years to meet with the president of a certain corporation they were trying to do business with. And they could always get to the 13th floor, but they couldn't get to the top floor. And they never could quite make connections. So anyway, General Murphy, come on in. There's a seat right here for you next to this young lady right here. at this particular episode, Balin's were going to go along because of the trade mission, which was a part of the game with Kansas State, the football game. Well, there was a nice lady in Lincoln who was a friend of mine, and it so happened that she was in college with the Emperor of Japan's wife. And I was aware of that. So I called her up, and I said, I need to have some tickets for the Emperor's box at the Tokyo Dome in Tokyo for the Kansas State-Nebraska football game. She said, well, I think we can do that. She said, I'll just call up my friend, the Empress, and we'll make sure that you have tickets for the Emperor's suite. So we did that. Is it too loud or not loud enough? A little farther away, about like that. We'll do it. So anyway, we ended up, I got 22 tickets for the Emperor's suite, and we got over there, and we decided that we would invite some of the Nebraskans up there with us, including the Balin's folks. And then I invite, and the Emperor's brother was going to be there. And incidentally, the Emperor's suite in the Tokyo Dome is really kind of nice. I mean, if you want, it defines in a hurry, first class. And so anyway, we invited the president of this company that Tony Raimondo was trying to meet with for years to do business with. And so he accepted the invitation. I mean, you don't turn down the invitation to come to the Emperor's suite. So we had various folks, including our governor and the Kansas governor, and so on and so forth. So we got to the ball game, and suddenly Tony Raimondo found himself not only meeting and greeting the president of the company they wanted to do business with, but he sat with him for 3 hours in the Emperor's suite at the Tokyo Dome while we were playing Kansas State. And they had a nice visit. And he went home with $2.8 million worth of business. At that very same visit, the governor and I were meeting with the president of the Bank of Mitsubishi. And we had an 8 o'clock breakfast appointment with the president of Mitsubishi. And so in the Chinese culture, punctuality is the protocol of kings. You are not late. There is no excuse to be late. So we were there very early, and we were ushered up to the top floor. We're going to have breakfast in this beautiful all-marble room. And the governor and I, this was then Governor Nelson, we were sitting there and waiting for the president to come in, and at precisely 8, the door opened, and he had a whole armload of books. And I said to the governor, I said, we're going to get the Sermon on the Mount now. But anyway, he walked in and sat down, and he introduced himself to us, and we introduced ourselves to him, and he said, now, gentlemen, first things first. And he laid out all these books, and they looked very familiar to us. He said, now, I am perhaps the world's best connoisseur and best fan of Willa Cather. He says, I have all of her books. And I said, I'd like to have you, the governor, and you, the secretary of state, autograph all of my Willa Cather books. And he said, don't challenge me on the know-how and the ins and outs and the facts and the information about Red Cloud, because he said, I know more about Red Cloud than you do. And when we got done with breakfast, we were convinced that he knew an awful lot about Red Cloud and Willa Cather. And so we did pretty well with the president of the Bank of Mitsubishi, who was a Willa Cather friend. Then I took Ben Nelson and Diane on their first visit as a governor to the Republic of China. They're one of our larger trade partners. And I was going to introduce them to the president. We were meeting with President Li as a preliminary to bringing over some of the trade delegation from Nebraska to do business in the Republic of China. And so I had set up this meeting with President Li. Now, the governor didn't know, Governor Nelson, then, that I knew President Li pretty well, because I had been with him on about 15 or 20 occasions, including the occasion when he and I signed Nebraska's sister state agreement. And he's also happens to be a Methodist. He also happens to be a graduate of Iowa State. And so he used to come to Lincoln, Nebraska for football and basketball games before he became governor and then moved up to become president of the Republic of China. And so I was aware of all of this background, and we had a lot of fun with that. So anyway, we had – now, in all heads of state, from the Pope to presidents, a courtesy visit is only 15 minutes. That's just routine. Well, we got in to see President Lee, and there was President Lee and myself, and he spoke fairly good English. He did have an interpreter with him, who now, incidentally, is number two in the ROC embassy in Washington, and a friend of ours. But and Diane was with us, the First Lady. And, of course, we got to visiting, and we got to visiting. And pretty soon the visit went on for a half an hour. And about this time I could see the presidential staff pacing. And then it went on for 45 minutes. And finally, I could see more staff pacing. And then I began to see the national news media gathering. And the visit went on for an hour. And about this time, the staff was getting really nervous. And the national news media were wondering, who are these people that have been with the president for more than an hour, and now it's an hour and and the president, in the meantime, about 50 minutes into this visit, had taken off his coat and just relaxed, and we had a nice chat. And, of course, we were chatting about Nebraska football. We were chatting about cattle and all kind of things. So it was a very nice visit. It went on for about an hour and 20 minutes, and finally it ended because he had another appointment waiting. And we could see that the national news media had lined up out there to meet us. And the governor said, okay, Bierman, he said, I'm going to let you handle this one. So the national media said, ask me, who are you folks? And we said, well, we're from Nebraska. And I said, well, we're from the United States of America. Ah! And we're from Lincoln. And finally, we had to explain where Lincoln, Nebraska was, and everything was fine. They said, well, now, why are you here? Well, we said it was a courtesy visit. And they said, for an hour and 20 minutes? And they said, what did you talk about? And I said, well, we talked about football. Foosball. Nobody understood this. And then we talked about cattle. And they said, wow, who are these people? So anyway, went on to explain about Nebraska foosball and about cattle and the fact that we're a trading partner and we sell them grain and so on and so forth. And for 3 days, we were on the nightly news over there, the lead story. So everybody knew about Nebraska. I got to tell you a couple other interesting stories. I had taken a delegation, in this case it was people to people, and you know, People to People is headquartered out of Kansas City. It was started by Eisenhower, and his first director for that, it's now being directed by Mary Eisenhower, and we've had her come into Lincoln a couple of times to speak. And if you really want an interesting speaker sometime, invite Mary Eisenhower to come to Omaha and for one of your forums. She's a great speaker and a lovely lady. And but it was run by Jay Nimchek in those days, and he went on to become, for all during Eisenhower's term, our ambassador to Prague. They call it Praha, but Czechoslovakia. And then he was followed by Miss Black. Anyway, so we were taking these people over to Prague. And incidentally, the embassy residence in Prague for the U.S. is probably the nicest embassy residence in the world. It's stunningly beautiful. And Jay and Peg Nimchek, of course, were very nice guests and hosts. And because I knew them, we were invited to come to the embassy residence as well as to the chancery where they operate their functions from. Before we had gone on this trip, sometime about a year before, the Omaha World Herald had run a story about Prague, Nebraska. We call it Prague, and about kolaches. Anybody familiar with kolaches? And it was almost a full-page story, and it talked about Prague being named after Prague, Czechoslovakia. So I cut that page out when I was Secretary of State, and I just sent it to His Excellency, the Mayor of Prague, Czechoslovakia. And it got there. So when we arrived into Czechoslovakia then, which was extremely communistic, and they know who is coming and going, J. Nemcek gets a memo from the mayor that he respectfully requested the presence for lunch of Alan and Linda Bierman at the mayor's office, which is about 800 years old, and it's like a castle. And I think 8 heads of state had been crowned in that room. So we were invited. Now, this was really out of the ordinary. And so Nemcek calls me from the hotel to come over, and he says, you know, this is really out of the ordinary. And he said, we're going to have to get permission for you to do this from the State Department, and I'm going to have to call the flag desk in Washington to allow you to come to go to the mayor's office for lunch. And so we did. And he said, now, and you're also going to have to do a debriefing when you get back. I said, well, that's fine. I'll do whatever needs to be done. So sure enough, at the appointed minute, the mayor's limousine and 2 bodyguards come to the embassy and fetch Linda and myself. And we and also Pat Combs. He works for radio here in Omaha somewhere now. Pat was with us. And we went to the mayor's office. And we were received with, Linda got a nice bouquet of red roses. We were presented with a gold medallion of the city. And we were presented with some estate bottled wines and so on and so forth. And so there's Linda and myself, Pat Combs, and an interpreter, and we're having lunch. And during the lunch, I said to the mayor, I said, Your Honor, we're very pleased with this invitation. I understand that not many American guests receive such an invitation, and he acknowledged that was true. And I said, why were we so lucky to be on your invitation list? He said, well, Mr. Secretary, earlier this year, you sent to me a newspaper clipping about Prague, Nebraska, and it told all about the good folks there, the Czechs, and the folks from Prague and Kolaches, and how that town in your state was named after our capital city. And he said, that touched me very deeply. He said, I was moved by that gesture. And he said, I was going through the roster of names of folks, visitors coming to our city. And he said, I noticed your name. And he said, I took the chance you were the same person, and I wanted to have you for lunch. So that's how we ended up for lunch. And we were there about 2 hours, and then pretty soon the limousine took us back, and I checked in dutifully to J. Nemcek, the ambassador, and I said, I'm back, Mr. Ambassador. Do you want to do the debriefing? But on the way back, I said to Linda, you know, I'm going to be asked why we were invited to lunch. And I said, if I tell the ambassador, who's got a report to Washington, that we were invited because I sent a newspaper clipping about Kolaches in Prague, Nebraska, to His Honor the Mayor, and that's why I was invited, they ain't going to believe that story. But anyway, that's how that happened. We were in Moscow one time, and on a Sunday morning, we decided to attend church. And we walked through the cemetery to get to the church, and all of the grave markers were mostly crosses made of metal during the war years and so on. They were mostly rusted out. And all of the gravestones and the flowers were being attended to by mostly 90-year-old ladies. We went into this beautiful church, and we went back in what would be called the narthex, and it seemed like a fairly decent crowd that morning. No young people, all old people. But we suddenly realized that in the back of the narthex, not far from where we were, was a coffin. You folks are having lunch. I probably should. Their embalming procedures over there in those days were different. And there were a lot of flies around and so on. And the widow is standing there next to the coffin where her husband is. and she's totally draped in black, and pretty soon she comes over and fetches me. And I said to Linda, oh boy, this is going to be an experience. So she takes me over to the coffin, so as reverently as I could, I went to the coffin and observed her. But, oh, I had a camera draped around me, and I handed that to Linda first. Well, I got to the coffin, and I could tell that she was pleased, but I could tell that she was troubled. And I thought, God, what am I doing wrong here? So pretty soon, I stand there. She goes and gets Linda. So Linda takes the camera off and hands it to Bill Marshall. Bill Marshall was a banker from Grand Island, Five Points Bank there, and he's also on the World Board of Directors for Holiday Inns. So whenever we traveled with him, we had pretty good digs around the world. But anyway, Linda handed the camera to Bill Marshall, and Linda gets over there to pay respects to this lady's husband who's in the coffin, which incidentally is made with plywood, just virtually screwed together, just plywood. And then I could tell that she was really disappointed again, and finally the lights came on, and Bill Marshall came over and handed the Polaroid camera to Linda, and we took pictures of her and her husband. He in the coffin, she standing there. Now, she understood cameras, but she didn't understand a Polaroid camera. Suddenly, she had instant photos, which kind of freaked her out. But we took five or six and handed them to her, so she had instant photos of she and her husband. And she was so thrilled, she started openly sobbing, and she got down on her knees to kiss our feet, which was kind of an experience. And then we finally found out later from our guide that these photos were the first photos she ever had of she and her husband together in her life. He in the coffin, she standing there, and these are the first photos as a couple they had ever enjoyed and had, and she was so thrilled. So that was our little experience whilst we were in Russia, and it was kind of interesting. We've had a lot of great experiences. One time we were asked by the good folks from Omaha Steaks to go to Chihuahua, Mexico, and this is before NAFTA. And I was asked to be the speaker and to cut the ribbon for the first ever food show in Mexico involving Mexico, Nebraska, and the U.S., and Canada. So all three of the countries now involved in NAFTA, this was the first food show as a precursor to NAFTA. And it was a huge food show, and we had about six or seven vendors from around Nebraska there, including Omaha Steaks. And so I made the speech and the presentation, and we cut the ribbon and did all the things that you do to open a food show and do all of the international toasting and so on and so forth. And we had to be there a couple of extra days because of the show. So the equivalent of the Secretary of State for that province or whatever they call it in Mexico was there and invited Linda and myself to visit the Copper Canyon. Who's been to Copper Canyon? Nobody. Copper Canyon is the Mexican Grand Canyon, except that it's seven times bigger than ours. In fact, it's four zones deep. Goes from tropical to frigid. And there are people in the bottom who've never left. And it is so, I mean, you fly airplanes through the canyon. It's huge. So anyway, we got in this airplane with the Secretary of State of Chihuahua. We presumed it was a state plane, although they do things a little differently. It had an ample assortment of nice beers, Mexican beers, Dos Equis and others, chilled. And, I mean, we always do that in our state plane, don't we? And so We went on this airplane trip through the Copper Canyon with the Secretary of State to visit the Copper Canyon and to see it, and it's remarkable. Make it a first priority. It's huge. You can go fly through it. You can take a train through it. It's just huge. So anyway, we're all through with our aerial tour, and by that time, we had enjoyed three or four beers, and for all of us, the call of nature became urgent. And before we got back to Chihuahua, which is going to be another hour and a half flight, and we couldn't handle that. So anyway, we find ourselves what looked like a nice grass pasture near a town. It looked smooth and looked level and looked nice. So we land on this runway, which is a pasture. Nice landing, beautiful, smooth, everything is fine. And we taxi over to where on one side there's some trees and on this side a bush. Well, all the gentlemen went over to the trees. My wife, Linda, went to the bush. About that time, the whole damn town came running to the airplane. They'd never seen an airplane, apparently. I mean, hundreds of them, little kids and all the... They're rushing the airplane to come see it, and we're, of course, in the trees and the bushes. We got that accomplished, and now the airplane is surrounded with all these people. Wonder, how are we going to clear the runway? How are we going to take off? So we finally got them shoot off to the side to what we thought would be not dangerous, and we thought if we started the engine, that would separate them a little bit. So finally, we got them off the runway so we could take off, and we finally made our flight back to Chihuahua. So that was the end of that particular mission. I got to tell you about a couple of local stories in Lincoln. We had a situation one time. Paul Quinlan was the director of the Real Estate Commission. And they were on the sixth floor of the Capitol, and by law, the Secretary of State's chairman of the Real Estate Commission. And Paul is and was a teetotaler. He just doesn't use refreshments of the adult kind at all. He's also an extremely straight arrow. Straight arrow. One time, a few minutes after five, somebody brought up to the Real Estate Commission office a quart of whiskey. And Paul freaked. He didn't know whether it was a bribe. He didn't know whether it was a setup. He didn't know what to do with it. He thought, if I pour it out, it'll be worse because then I'll have an empty bottle. How do you walk out of the Capitol carrying, you know, a quart of whiskey? He didn't have a bag to put it in, so he just left it in the closet, and he come down to see me, and he said, Alan, he says, I've got a really serious problem. He said, somebody has brought into this Capitol a quart of whiskey to the Real Estate Commission office. And he said, I don't know what we're going to do with it. How do we get rid of it? And he was just panicked. And I said, well, Paul, and he told me about he had considered dumping it in the sink, getting rid of it. But he said, then I'd have an empty bottle. And then they'd think that I drank it or something in the Capitol. And he was really panicked. So I said, well, I'm just going to walk down and see security, and we'll just have security come up and take care of it and let them handle the bottle. So we routed up security from the mansion. They came over, came up the sixth floor, and they took custody of that whiskey bottle. And I always thought to myself, damn, I bet they enjoyed that. But anyway, one time, Peg King, who was my secretary, she was stolen from me by Charlie Thone. And put that in the story. He stole her from me. Incidentally, she's back working for Governor Heineman. She was good people. But anyway, she was my secretary, but she was working then for Charlie Thone, and she was at the front desk. And on this particular day, a large lady had apparently been on furlough from the institution. And this lady was large. I mean, she could play both sides of the line at once. And she, of course, was all dressed in those days in whites, and she was on furlough or had escaped or something. But anyway, she found herself at the governor's office. And she saw Peg working on some admiral commissions. How many here? Admiral. You've all seen the admiral. Well, she was putting the seals on, you know, getting them fixed up for people to come and get. And this lady thought that Peggy was working on high naval secrets, and that she was going to be giving those away and compromising the safety of our state, and she was really exercised by this. And so this lady came down to my office and stomped right past the receptionist and came right into my office, literally picked me up by the nap of my collar and marched my butt right down to the governor's office. Just dragging me like this with my suit coat right in front of Peggy, and said, "This young lady right here is giving away top naval secrets of the state, and I want you to stop her." Well, Peggy and I were kind of like, "My God, what's happening?" And so I said, "Peggy," I said, "you put those away right now and put them away in your desk and lock up your desk." And she did. And the lady was just all calmed. And she left. Pretty soon, I called up Peggy and I said, "I hope you understood what I was doing." you don't usually walk down to the governor's office and tell somebody what to do. So anyway, we got this lady all handled, who was very much concerned about top naval secrets with the naval commissions. One more story, then we'll take some questions. We were in Taipei City. And Chiang Kai-shek, his chief of staff was General Albert C. Wiedemeyer. How many knew General Wiedemeyer? You did. Great Nebraskan. He was chief of staff for Chiang Kai-shek. And of course, he was a great Nebraskan. And General Wiedemeyer virtually was in charge of raising Wego Chang. That was Chiang Kai-shek's brother, and because he was young, and so Wego Chang became very close to General Wiedemeyer, and Chiang Kai-shek and Madam Chang were very close to General Wiedemeyer also. In fact, he's mentioned in a lot of their books, and she was a great painter, and she also did some paintings for the Wiedemeyers. But anyway, I was aware of Wego Chang because Wego Chang used to visit occasionally Stratcom, and he also taught some classes down at Leavenworth, where you had school, the other part of Leavenworth. There's a Command and General Staff College down there, in addition to the institution. And Murphy was, which one were you at? Command General Staff, both. So anyway, I had become a friend of Wego Chang through my visits to Republic of China. So we had a Nebraska trade delegation of about 30 chamber members from Nebraska who were selling products to Republic of China. And a friend of mine had a big dinner for us at the Bankers Club, and I invited General Wego Chang to come by, and he did, to meet and greet these Nebraskans. And he was delighted to do so. And he was kind of a interesting humorous character. So anyway, we're at this very nice dinner at the Bankers Club, and all of a sudden, Wego Chang decides that he's going to teach us how to make depth chargers. Now, how many of you fraternity boys remember how to make depth chargers? No hands go up. Well, it's where you have a big stein of beer, and you take a shot full of, I believe it was vodka, and you drop it in, and it has a chemical reaction that makes a mini explosion, not dangerous, right on the table. So here he was showing our folks how to make depth chargers by dropping vodka into the beer and causing a little explosion that looked like a depth charger had gone off. So that was our experience at that dinner that night with General Wego Chang, who was Chiang Kai-shek's brother. Anyway, that's a little bit of a recitation. I got to close with one story. Every year, they would open the state fair opening day with a celebrity event. How many have been to that event? You've been there. You covered it. You may have covered this event. And Rich Bailey was in charge of doing this from Bailey Lauerman Law Firm. And he would line up what we did each year. And the Secretary of State would go over, and the governor, and the lieutenant governor, and the treasurer, and some senators, and the mayor of Lincoln. And we would do things like backing wagons with a tractor, or milking goats, or milking cows, or lassoing pigs, or some kind of a thing that was an attraction getter to open the fair. It was a media event. Well, this one year, I never did hear from Rich what we were going to do. And he called me about 3 or 4 days before the fair. And he said, Alan, he said, do you still have the media event down for the opening day of the state fair? And I said, oh, yeah, I've got it right here on my calendar. But I said, when are we supposed to be there? I said, well, he said, no, he told me when to be there. And I said, say, what are we doing this year? He said, well, we're going to do bungee jumping. Bungee jumping. I said, really? He said, really? Now, I won't even get on the house to change storm windows. My wife won't even let me get on the roof anymore to put up Christmas decorations. I don't like heights. I won't even stand on that table. I'm just deathly afraid. And now, 16 stories up, we're going to be doing bungee jumping. And I thought, well, that's 2 or 3 days from now. I could be sick. We could be busy. I could be in a meeting. The day came and arrived, and everybody said, oh, it's time to go to the state fair. And I thought, oh, my God. So I call up Rich, and I said, Rich, I said, do you drink before or after? And he said, no. He said, before, during, and after. And then I thought, wow. I said to Lindy, do you suppose I ought to wear a diaper? But anyway, we get over there, and there's a huge crowd. There's thousands there. Were you there that day? There's TV cameras and radio things, and there's all kind of folks, and the governor's there. Incidentally, he wanted to jump, but the patrol wouldn't let him. So anyway, here we are, 16 stories up, we're going to bungee jump. So I thought, I can't get out of it now, and what am I going to do? So they put you in this harness. And then they take you up in this cage up 16 stories to a platform, and there's an attendant up there who checks your rigging. And I thought, you know, I'm a Republican. I bet that guy's a Democrat, and I bet he's going to tie that rope 10 feet too long. So I said, I'm really deathly afraid of heights. I said, how do you get over these? He said, there's a secret. They said, don't ever look down. He said, just look out over the horizon. Just keep looking at the horizon. Don't look down. And he said, I'm going to give you a count. And then he said, you can holler whatever you want to holler. And he said, we'll pull the trap. Just jump out. Okay? So I kept looking out over the horizon. The fair was beautiful. I didn't see a darn thing. But I just kept looking out over the horizon. And pretty soon he goes, 3, 2, 1, go. And I yelled out, go Big Red, and I just did a swan dive. Now, the interesting thing about bungee jumping is not the you anticipate the fall, but it's bouncing back up. Falling up is weird. And you do that 3 or 4 times before you finally settle down, and then they lower the rope, and you're back on the ground. Thought, I got through that episode. And incidentally, the media rated me on a scale of 10 as a 9 on my swan dive. It was in the papers. So then I thought, well, you know, I've really got to be cool about this is nothing. And, you know, I'm wondering if I'm okay everywhere. So, you know, I just got out my comb and started combing my hair like it was nothing big. But anyway, that was my episode at the state fair. And I haven't done one of those things since. So anyway, we've rambled on way too long about stories and things that didn't make the news. Stories behind the stories and story the rest of the story. So who has some questions about some of these interesting things?
I was curious, first off, did it ever strike you that they wouldn't let the governor jump, but they let you jump? We have a number of questions. If any more, just raise your hand and I'll come get them. What was the toughest election you ever supervised in Nebraska?
There is an answer to that. I believe, was 68 a presidential year? I was, we had a situation back in those days in Cherry County. There were some precincts in which it was like 150 miles from the precinct to get the returns into Valentine, the county seat. And this was from, it was either Mother Lake Precinct or Goose Lake Precinct. I think it was Mother Lake Precinct. Long way out there. In those days, I believe it was the Burlington came through there. From Wyoming and up through and up to Norfolk and eventually Sioux City. And they had cabooses in those days. So the train always came through about an hour and a half or so after the polls closed. So they would literally put the canvas bags, the returns, and all the materials on the caboose and take it to Valentine, where somebody from the county clerk's office would offload it and take it to the county seat, the courthouse, and tally the returns. Well, that night, about 3 in the morning, I get a call. No, about 4 in the morning. I get a call from Minneapolis, and it's the yard agent in Minneapolis. He said, "Mr. Secretary," I said, "that's me." He said, "can you identify yourself?" And so I did. He said, "are you familiar with elections?" I said, "yes, we handle the elections." He said, "are you familiar with Cherry County?" And I said, "oh, yes, very familiar." And so he said, "well, describe your ballot materials." And this guy was actually a yard agent who was in like a deputy sheriff. A deputized railroad agent, security. And he says, "well, we have 2 sacks here that say Cherry County, Nebraska, and it says election supplies and ballots." And he said, "they're sealed." I said, "well, that's very much, I'm sure, the ballot materials from Nebraska." And then the lights went on. Oh, my God. The caboose didn't stop. The train kept going, worked its way clear up to Minneapolis with these ballots from Mother Lake Precinct. And they ended up in the railroad yard in Minneapolis. So I thought, so I explained to him that don't touch them, leave them sealed, that we're going to, we'll come and get them. And so I think a man by the name of Ebel was then the superintendent of the state patrol, and he went to the same church I did. And so I'm calling him about 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and I'm telling him that we've got to take the state patrol plane, and we've got to go to Minneapolis right away to get some Nebraska ballots. And he said, "Behrman," he said, "I know you're up late on election night," but he said, "were you drinking?" I said, "no, no, no, no." So I explained to him the whole situation. In the meantime, then I called back this yard guy that I would prepare some documentation for the pilots to get, they'd be identified, and I'd have a special document for them that they would hand to the yard agent, and they were to release the ballot materials from Mother Lake Precinct. Now, then I began to worry about 6:30 or 7 that Walter Crankcase was going to call, because, you see, they couldn't finish the preliminary tally for Cherry County, and they couldn't get the tally to us to get Nebraska totals, less the few absent disabled for the following Thursday. And so I'm beginning to worry that the networks are going to start calling because Nebraska wasn't reported in. And we're a Midwest state, you know, they understand Alaska and they understand Hawaii and California, but Nebraska should be in. And so I begin to worry that I'm going to start getting calls. And, you know, if I tell them, "well, we're not done yet in Nebraska because Mother Lake Precinct, their ballots accidentally ended up in Minneapolis on a train in the caboose," they're not going to buy that. So anyway, along about 11 o'clock or so, we get back the ballot sacks. Now I've got another problem. How do you break the seals? That's supposed to be done locally by the canvassing board. I don't have authority to break the seal. So then we huddled with the Attorney General, Clarence Meyer in those days, And we figured out that because of unusual circumstances, and if we had plenty of witnesses and we recorded what was happening, that we could break the seals to make sure they included ballots, and they did, uncounted ballots. And we tallied up the ones for president. There aren't many voters in Mother Lake precinct. And we called those to the county clerk, and she got them into her totals. They got their totals back to us. And it wasn't but 42 minutes later, I got the first call from AP wondering where the Nebraska totals are. And I said, oh, we've got them right here. Are you ready to copy? So there you go. That was the story. That was the toughest one we faced in elections. In addition to the recount for Ben Nelson, which we recounted twice, and statewide, two votes changed.
Wow. That speaks well of the system.
Right.
Yes, he did. Which governor that you worked with had the greatest sense of humor?
Oh, my. Greatest sense of humor would be probably, dry humor would be Johans. Humor would be Nobby Tiemann. And eventually, years later, would come to be Frank Morrison, a great individual. Kay Orr, who was she just didn't have much of a sense of humor. But she was a gracious lady, very gracious. Charlie Thone was always very serious, but he tried at humor. And occasionally he succeeded. Every governor I worked with were marvelous, treated me well, every one of them. They were super. I got to tell you about... one more story. Bob Kerry was governor, and the live-in in those days was, what was her name? Deborah. Incidentally, she had a dog. She had a doggy, a German Shepherd, as big as a pony. And Deborah was living at the mansion and staying at the mansion, and one day, she didn't, and Bob Kerry on East Lincoln on A Street owned a Prairie Life Center. I think he maybe still is part owner of it, which is a health spa, a health club. Well, Deborah Winger decided that she needed to go work out at the health spa this particular morning. And she didn't realize that the governor's limousine isn't really the governor's. It's on lease. Every state leases a limousine. But it's leased to the state patrol. So the state patrol has custody of the car, although it's the governor's. Now, there were some other complications. She wasn't exactly the first lady. So there were issues of insurance and other coverages. Well, she decided, and the governor was over at the Capitol in his office, and she decided she was just going to get in the limousine and go work out at the health club. And she's going down A Street, which we happen to live on. And she's boogieing down A Street east to the health club there on 70th and A. And she was exceeding the speed limit. It's, I think in those days it was 30, now it's 35. But I think she was doing something. And so sure enough, she gets pulled over by a city policeman, who at first doesn't quite realize who she is, but he's thinking, God, this lady looks familiar to me. And finally she identifies herself to him, and he's got Deborah Winger about to be cuffed and stuffed. Well, as it turned out, her driver's license had expired. Now, none of this makes the paper because the reporters didn't ask the follow-on questions. And Kerry covered it pretty well by just saying, oh, gentlemen, fluff your pillows, or whatever the line was. You remember that? But anyway, so now she has stolen a patrol car. She's speeding in Lincoln. She's not insured, and her driver's license is expired. Well, anyway, we finally got all of that handled, but that was an episode I'll never forget.
How are our elections different today than when you were in office? And you may want to mention a little bit about term limits. I know you have some thoughts about that.
Well, elections are different. First of all, with regard to the campaigns, they seem to be getting less civil, and that's a pity. Many candidates have come to me for advice on how to campaign, and I give them advice, and they don't follow it. But I always make them write my advice in my presence, and then I save it. And then when they don't make it, I call them up, and I explain to them how they lost the election. I said, first of all, they said, well, what do you advise I do in the campaign? I said, that's simple. There's three things. Just remember an old Chinese proverb, he or she who is throwing mud is losing ground. And I make them write that down. Then I said, run for the office. Don't run against your opponent. And I make him write that down. And then I tell him, be civil. Be senatorial. Be gubernatorial. Be whatever, secretarial. But act like a candidate who's wanting to be a public office. And then I make him write that down. And then I write it down, and then I save it. And then I always have fun calling them up when they don't make it. The last one I gave that advice to right in my office. I was the first person he came to see after he ran or he filed for office, and that's the only advice I gave him. Those three things made him write it down. I wrote it down, and then I called him here a few weeks ago. Anyway, elections have changed. I think we've lost the point of civility, and it's a democratic exercise, and it ought to be done with some dignity. Number two, there's been a blending of the lines. We have so many special use districts that it used to be purely precincts, either numbered or lettered or had names, and every precinct was sacred, and every ballot in that precinct was sacred to that. Well, now you have, for example, the town of Emerson. The town of Emerson is in three school districts. It's in three counties. It's bisected by a public power district. It's trisected by a other special use district. So in Emerson, they can have six different combinations of ballots. So it's become very cumbersome in that regard. Also, everybody wants the returns before the election, it seems like. So that's made it very cumbersome, and trying to make sure everybody's working from speed instead of accuracy. That worries me. So those are some of the ways in which it's changed. Also, it's become, you know, elections are expensive. Elections cost about $6 a vote cast to put on. So it's a very expensive part of democracy. Now, if more people would vote, that cost goes down per capita. And unfortunately, the United States in voter turnout in the world is about 12th. Ireland is first. So we have some improvements.
Term limits. I know we've talked before in the past about the loss of institutional knowledge there. Your thoughts on that?
Term limits, I'm generally opposed to them for various reasons. First of all, I think the way you do term limits is for each individual voter to go to the polls and decide who should be term limited, rather than doing it artificially, which is a self-indictment. It tells a citizenry, like the state of Nebraska, you aren't good enough to select your senators, and because you're not that good or good enough, we need to do it automatically by law that everybody leaves at a certain time, and all new folks come in. Some senators shouldn't be there very long. But the voters make that determination, not some artificial law. The other thing that bothered me about it is the concept and the funding of it especially is foreign to us, and mostly operating out of Chicago and other places, and they come in and buy signatures, and that concept worries me a lot. It is sad to dump 80 or 100 or 150 years worth of institutional knowledge of senators who just suddenly find themselves gone. And, you know, a lot of issues are easy, but most are not. And if you're going to take on a restructuring of the Uniform Commercial Code, all, what is it, 600 pages? I don't know how long it is, but it's a whole volume. That's tricky business. And it's nice to have around people who understand it, at least know about it and know what it means and some of the ramifications. So when you put out the pasture in a given day, half the legislature, that's a sad loss for us.
Question said, I remember listening to you on KHUB in Fremont in the early 60s. Any desire to go back to the radio business or any good story?
That was the last century. I can recall one episode. It was a Sunday. I was working at KHUB Radio, and we always covered from 11 to 12. We did a live remote from First Lutheran Church in Fremont. And precisely at 12 o'clock, they threw it back to me in the studio. And in those days, we didn't have all the sophisticated, you know, the people on radio now don't have to work at all. We had to actually post the logs and all that stuff. And we had to cue all of the ads, and you had to cue the records. It was work in those days. And I had just put down a record, and I had queued up right after the benediction, David Rose's The Stripper. I only got one phone call. Boy, that was the last century.
And any good story about this when Nebraska was granted statehood? And because the question says, I know you were there.
I was there. You'll recall that the first secretary, the first capitol was right over here, wherever Central High is over here. And there was debate about moving it to various locations, including Fontenelle, and eventually it got. The Constitution provides that wherever the seal is located, that's the situs of government. And the Secretary of State in those days, Secretary of State Kennard and Governor Butler, they decided to move the Capitol. And they, on a Palm Sunday morning, with a buckboard and a team of horses and some straw, moved the state seal, the one that we still use in the Capitol. They moved it across the Platte River to an area called Lancaster, now Lincoln, and that's how the state capitol really got moved, by moving the state seal. And it was done by during the night by Secretary of State Kennard. The Kennard House is still over there by the Capitol, and is one of our museums now, and Governor Butler. So, and a painting was done of that episode, and you can see that painting in the Secretary of State's office.
Did you know how to drive a buckboard? I do. Ladies and gentlemen, a round of applause for our guest, Alan Bierman.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. We've heard a talk by former Nebraska Secretary of State and currently Executive Director of the Nebraska Press Association, Alan Bierman. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, January 18th, 2007, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be held on Thursday, February 15th at 12 noon. At that time, the topic stem cell research will be discussed by Dr. Cheryl Pittner, President of the Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and Assistant Clinical Professor at Creighton University. And Dr. David Krause, Professor of Genetics, Cell Biology, and Anatomy at UNMC. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.